Wow, Grace, you got some pipes on you, eh? Oh, wow. You deserve some beer over there. There you go. Ben, there's some over there for you. And Isaac, that was delicious. That was really good. Wow. Unbelievable. We're wrapping up the fermentation series, next series, and I just want to acknowledge all the people that have brought in fermented food. Isaac, Warren has brought in stuff, Zach has brought in stuff, Julie's brought in stuff. It's just been so fun. And next week, we sort of top it off with some sourdough bread and some wine. So you're not going to want to miss next week. It's going to be lots of fun as we wrap up the series. The whole series has been looking at fermentation, right, and how the process of fermentation with both food and beverages is so similar to our own personal call to development. And we've talked about continually, certain things have to die in us while other things are allowed to grow for us to age well, to mature well. But what is the end goal of that? What does that look like? You know, so oftentimes we sort of put like Mother Teresa or Gandhi up on this pedestal, and it's like, that seems so unattainable for all of us normal folk. Or sometimes we talk about Jesus' Sermon on the Mount or the fruit of the Spirit, and those can seem like impossibly high standards to attain as well. Like, what is the end goal? What are we trying to ferment towards? I want to suggest this morning this. I believe that the height of human maturity is the ability to bless others and the world, which I know sounds cheesy, right? Sort of like, I just want to be a blessing. We've all heard that plenty of times. It can sound kind of cheesy, overly pious. I get it. Let me try to unpack this a little bit for us. When I talk about blessing, I'm talking about three things. I think the height of human maturity is this, to be able to see others, really see others, to take genuine delight in others, and to give ourselves away for others. This is the prototype of blessing we see in Scripture. And we actually see it in both Testaments, actually. In the Old Testament, the very first chapter of Scripture, the story of creation, God creates the world out of nothing, and at the end of each day, God looks upon what he has done, and he sees it and pronounces it as good. Six times, God saw that it was good, good, good. And then on the final day, he creates humanity, and he sees that it's very good. Saw, he looks. This is the prototype, I think, for blessing. But we find an even more full, mature illustration of blessing at Jesus' baptism in Matthew chapter 3. And this is how it unfolds. Jesus came from Galilee to the Jordan to be baptized by John. Crazy John, you know, wearing, what was he wearing? Camel something, eating locusts and honey. John tried to deter him, saying, I need to be baptized by you. Why do you come to me? And Jesus replied, let it be so now. It is proper for us to do this to fulfill all righteousness. Then John consented. And as soon as Jesus was baptized, he went up out of the water. At that moment, heaven was opened. And he saw the Spirit of God descending like a dove and alighting on him. And a voice from heaven said, this is my Son whom I love. With him I am well please, there's a progression here with God and how he blesses Jesus at his baptism. God sees Jesus, the heavens open up, God sees Jesus. He speaks to this is my child in whom I take delight. N.T. Wright translates it as, you're my son and you make me so glad. And then finally, God gives his Spirit to Jesus here. Seeing, taking delight, giving. And this story is recorded in all three of the Synoptic Gospels, not all of them, not John. And it's a marquee moment in the life of Jesus. Jesus internalizes this blessing, and it shaped how he acted in the world. It's pivotal that this happens at the beginning, because if you read further in Matthew, Jesus takes in this blessing, he internalizes it, and he opens up the Sermon on the Mount with what? Blessed are the poor in spirit. Blessed are the meek. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness. He internalizes this blessing, this blessed consciousness, and he's able to act out of that and bless others. It sort of empowered him. He knew he was blessed, and it affected his mentality, his consciousness. Sadly, though, I would say this. Many of us don't operate from the same mentality that Jesus did. Our mentality is not one of blessing, rather it's one of being cursed. What do I mean by that? We often associate cursing with certain words, right? But that's not cursing at all. Cursing is what we do when something like this happens. When we look at someone who we do not like and we think or say, just even in our head, I wish you weren't here. I wish you would go away. Most of the time, it isn't even verbal. It's non-verbal communication. Cursing is what we do when kids are around us and they're irritating us, and either verbally or non-verbally, we say to them, shut up, go away. That's cursing. Cursing is what we do when we look at someone and think, what a jerk that person is. Cursing is what we do when we look at someone, when we think about something, act towards them subtly in a way that says they're full of themselves. They have no talent. That is what it means to curse others, and it's far more deadly than certain curse words. All of us experience this over the course of our lives, and for most of us, there are profound moments in our past, our history, where we have been cursed early in life. Sometimes there are defining moments of cursedness in our past. For others of us, there's like thousands of little cursed moments in our existence. Sometimes they're big, sometimes they're a series of small things. My dad, I think, operates out of a bit of a cursed consciousness. He had one of those profound moments. It's interesting. The more you get to know people, you start to know their defining stories. And that's why I like at Pub Theology how we hear people's stories there so often. Because when you get to know people and they start telling the same story over and over again, you realize that moment has some significance for them. My father has a story that only if you're close to him, he will tell, but it's sort of one he comes back to regularly, and to me it speaks of a cursed consciousness. When he was 8 or 9 years old, he grew up in Nova Scotia, and him and his buddies would go swimming every day down in this big sort of lake near them, and his friends and he were out playing about 100 meters on a raft out in the lake. And they were playing around there, and they were all standing there, jumping in, having a great time. One of my dad's friends decided he was going to swim back to shore. So he said, hey, I'm going to shore. He got about halfway through, and he was having trouble swimming. He started calling out, help, help. And so my dad jumped into the water to help rescue his friend, and he got to him. And by that time, his friend was completely exhausted, and he put his friend on his back and started swimming to shore, but he was only 8, 9, couldn't make it himself, and he had this moment where he had to decide, do I keep swimming or let my friend go? And he let his friend go, and his friend drowned, passed away. And he got on shore, police came, and my father went home to his parents, and he told them, I let my friend drown today. And his parents simply said to him, oh, that's too bad. And never said anything about it again. And you can tell, if you know my father at all, by the way, I'm going to edit this part out on the recording because I don't want my father necessarily hearing this. But if you look at his consciousness, so often in our past, whether it's our parents or some authority figure, has said to us in some way, I don't care. That's annoying. I don't want to hear about that. And it's interesting that for my father, whenever you get sort of in a deep conversation with him, that's a story that comes up as something that has affected his consciousness for his whole life. That's a cursed consciousness because his parents didn't take the time to work through that with him. For others of us, it happens in a million different small ways. How many of us here have older siblings? Okay, then you know exactly what a cursed consciousness is. Because what happens as younger siblings is eventually your parents say to your older sibling, take your younger brother or sister out with you. And what happens? You get the, oh, right? It's just the, oh, I don't want to take them out with me. There's this feeling you get as a child where you're like, oh, they don't want me around. And we get that all through life. We get into school and we realize that some people don't want us around. And it lasts right up into adulthood. I remember a couple years ago, there was Chris and I used to always get invited to this party and by some friends of ours. Every year, it was an annual thing. And the one year, we didn't get invited to the party. And we're like, did they cancel the party? And this was eating on our minds, on our conscience. And they always hosted their party at their house, had a great little backyard. And so one summer night, the night we thought the party was, we drove by their house just seeing if the lights, what did we do? Did we annoy them? Why didn't we get invited to the party? And there's been other times where Kristen and I don't know if this has ever happened to you. Have you ever showed up in a room and you just know you're not welcome there? We had two friends of ours invite us to a birthday party of other friends, and we're like, yeah, that'd be great to go along. And we went and we showed up, and you could tell everyone in the room was like, oh, what are they doing here? They didn't say a word, but there's just this whole sort of nonverbal communication that Kristen and I weren't welcome there. And the whole meal, birthday party, we're sitting there like, should we leave? I don't think we're welcome here. See, all of us, here's the thing. If you were to look back over your entire life as like a movie, like a video, first of all, it'd be really boring. But what you would see is that countless times you've been cursed. There are countless times you've been cursed by others when you heard or sensed somebody saying to you, go away, you aren't wanted here, you're not important, you're boring, you're a failure, you're irritating. And the result of these moments is kind of like a residual shame, a cursed consciousness rather than a blessed consciousness, which is what Jesus operated after. There's a Jungian psychoanalyst named Robert Moore. He's done some really fascinating work. I'm planning on studying a bit more of his stuff this summer. He does some stuff with human archetypes. And he's done some amazing work on the psychology of people through sort of this Jungian model. And what he says is this: most adults in Western culture live with a chronic depression. And he distinguishes this from clinical depression, which is an illness that requires professional help. He says most adults today live with a chronic depression. And he says the reason is simple: because they haven't been blessed and affirmed in life. Most of us as adults have never truly been noticed and delighted in and given someone else's life, someone else given part of themselves to us. And the remedy that Moore claims is this: we have to find blessing in life. For Moore, the remedy is not therapy, it's not counseling, it's not self-help books, it's not more success or sex or whatever. It's one thing: we have to find blessing in life. I mean, consider why someone like Joel Osteen, right? How many are familiar with him? Big pastor in the States. Why is he so popular? I mean, you look at someone like him and you go, for me anyway, I go, I don't know how much is there with Joel Osteen, but why is he so popular? Because he's just always, he's kind of like a parental figure, isn't he? Just always, God loves you. He's just constantly blessing people, and people crave that sort of stuff. And this is the invitation for us to a full sense of maturity, to be people who bless others. God blesses Jesus. Jesus then internalizes it and spends the rest of his life blessing others, and he gives us the mission to be a blessing as well. And I believe the highest form of maturity is this: to bless others. And how? To really see them, to take delight in them, and to give part of ourselves away for them. And I want to look at each of those three elements. Why is it a blessing to really see someone? Well, I am really delighted to welcome a new Nexus poet up to the stage here. Hillary, won't you come? And I know you have put together a little a reading for us, and this is on the longing to be noticed.
Hello. I was just saying, now I feel pressure because you called me a poet. But I did practice in front of my 4-year-old this morning, and I asked him if it was good, and he said yes, so I kind of feel more confident. This is a little piece that I wrote on longing to be noticed. 9 years ago, I walk into a program room at an early year center in Kitchener. It's my first time here, and I'm hoping to connect with other young moms like myself. Life has drastically changed since my firstborn arrived. Long days are spent without adult companionship, and my whole world is different. I just need to know that I'm not alone. So I sit down in the circle of mothers and watch quietly as they chat amongst themselves. No one seems to notice me. No one talks to me or looks my way. And I begin to wonder if I'm really present and perceivable. Maybe I'm an ephemeral creature, transient and momentary, just passing through a world in which I have no substance, no form. Why doesn't anyone say hi to me? At the end of the session, I pack up baby and bag, knowing it'll just be another long day alone. Occasionally, I venture out to the local mall. It's not my favorite place to go, but there I am, hoping to find a little something to make me feel fresh and fabulous. A woman with three boys at home needs femininity and fashion. I haven't come here to be noticed, but I find that my focal point is just that. I catch a glance at my reflection in the mirror of one of my favorite stores. The face staring back at me looks, well, tired. Wrinkles and weariness carve their way into my skin like the lines on an etch-a-sketch board. Maybe I should be shopping for anti-aging cream instead of shirts. Will I ever be noticed again? A few weeks ago, I attend a class at the hot yoga studio on Belmont Street. It is freezing outside, but hotter than Hades in here. The smell of body odor and stinky feet permeates the air, making its way through my nasal canal. The instructor enters the room, and I stand to assume the first posture. I notice that my shins are beaded with sweat. I never knew shins could sweat like that. The class begins to breathe and bend, and I'm pretty sure I can feel my eyeballs start to perspire. I'm listening as the instructor guides us through the rhythm of the Bikram vernacular. I wonder if he'll notice my limber-like postures. Maybe I can just, like, blow his mind with my flexibility and Bengal tiger strength. But my rib cage seems to get in the way of the perfect pose, and I leave like a little schoolgirl longing to be teacher's pet. As I reflect over these moments of my human hang-ups, it occurs to me that it's not just strangers that I aim to amaze. Sometimes it's simply the people who've known me the longest who I wish would notice me again anew. To see me for who I am today and not for the person that I was. I'd like to be able to say to them, look at me, I'm different, I've changed. There is so much more to me now than there was before. Just once more, my ego exclaims. Just one more time, I'd like to be noticed by someone other than me. Am I alone in my ache? Should I be ashamed of what it is I crave? Or am I created to captivate?
Thank you. Kerry, I appreciate that. That was a very intimate look inside of you, and I think you touch upon a primal urge we all feel, and that's to be seen, to be noticed, to be blessed. And it happens all the time in social settings, in front of strangers, in front of people we're desperately trying to impress, and as you pick up, in front of people we've known for years, and we just wish they'd notice us again in a different way. And to answer your question, if I can do so, no, I don't think you're alone, and no, I don't think you should be ashamed. I think there's something human about wanting to be noticed and seen. I think we all feel this. This is part of what it means to be human. We're all desperately looking to be noticed, seen, recognized, and when we aren't, it leaves an ache within us. For those of you who don't know, I, for 2 years, mentored under Bruxy Cavey. And every month I would go down, and we would have Eastside Mario's together. And this happened for 2 years. So 24 times this happened, and it was good. And towards the end of the mentoring time, Kristen and I went out with he and his wife for Thai food. And then we actually went, the four of us, to a taping of George, he's on hockey now. See, I just can't say his last name, so I wanted you to. George Trompanopoulos, yeah. We went to a taping of the show together. It was great. And our time together came to an end for different reasons. We sort of stopped the sort of meeting together. And then a couple years later, I ran into him at a conference. I'm like, hey, Bruxy, how you doing? He's like, sorry, who? I'm like, seriously? Brad, it's Brad. He's like, I don't know. I'm like, you're killing me, man. Seriously, we met 24 times. We dined together. Went and saw the CBC together. He's like, I'm sorry, man. Now, Bruxy, he's a bit of an eccentric, I think you could say. But there's something about, I mean, have you ever had that where you're in the supermarket or whatever and you're like, hey, how are you doing? And you can just tell that person doesn't recognize you at all. And there's just that sort of, really? You don't recognize me. See, to really see another person is to give them a powerful blessing, but it implies seeing others in a way that we don't normally see them. We are blessed, or we bless others when we see others, either in word or body language that communicates, I'm really glad you're here. You bring something special into my life. You add something to this room. You are delightful to be around. When we can see people that way, it's a tremendous blessing. Zoe right now is cracking me up. She's 3 years old, and she still has this thing where she thinks that if she covers her eyes, I can't see her, which is awesome because she'll be like, I'm hiding. Can you see me? I'm like, you're right there. Yes, I can see you. But it's this constant game of see me, notice me. And kids have no shame about it. They just want to be noticed. Over the years, we put up, of course, much more subtlety around our desire to be noticed, but it's still there. The philosopher Emmanuel Levinas, he talks so much about the face. He had this interesting philosophy that said we don't really come into our own or have our own sense of identity until we look into the face of another. And what he would say is this. He would say essentially that our personal identity comes into its own as we learn to recognize other people's faces. And it's fascinating because neuroscience seems to be confirming this. Neuroscience seems to be telling us this. We only learn empathy and compassion by looking at other people's faces. And as children, we begin to mimic the facial features of others, and in that is born empathy and compassion as we mimic what we see in other people's faces. There's something about being seen that reminds us of our shared humanity. To really see others is the beginning of compassion, and to be really seen is the beginning of a blessed consciousness. Consider the selfie and how popular it's become. Now, do you read the Nexus Weekly? Because I asked for selfies and I got like 6. I have a feeling there's some trust issues between me and everyone here. There wasn't a lot of trust about what I would do. That's okay. I had this whole thing I was going to do if I got a lot of selfies, but I didn't get a lot of them, but let's take a look. I want to acknowledge the people who sent me them. There's Phil, and who do you got next? There's Julie sent me a selfie, and Bronson, who's in sunny Florida right now, and Caroline sent me one, and Melissa sent me one, and the whole Colrose family sent me a selfie. The selfie is fascinating. It's a recent phenomenon, and it's no surprise that in an age of faceless communication, the selfie has taken off. Consider this. Google recently reported that on Android alone, that doesn't take into account Apple phones, BlackBerry phones, any other phone device. They recently reported that on Android alone, people take 93 million selfies a day. Now, it's kind of creepy that they know that. I don't know how they know people are taking that many selfies. But think about that. 93 million times a day, just on Android, people are taking selfies. Self-portraiture has become an obsession. Some might point to the vanity of it all, but I see something very different. In a world of faceless communication, I think our primal desire to be seen cannot be satiated. And so the selfie becomes a way of saying, behind wireless communication and communicating over phones and internet, I still desire to be seen. The selfie has become a way to express our primal urge to be seen, to be noticed. Or think about emojis. What are emojis? There they are. I'm sure you use them occasionally when you're typing. What are they? They're simply these little faces that we add to our faceless communication to try to what? Replicate the emotional context of the human face. It's a way to try to imitate our human face. It's a way of trying to humanize our communication because we all know what happens. It happens all the time, doesn't it? You write something, text someone, and you get that sort of, uh-oh, I think that might have come across wrong, so I need to send a little face with the wink so they know that I'm just, hey, I'm kind of kidding, maybe, I don't know, right? But behind our faceless communication, there's this desire, you need to see my face, even if it's only that. To be seen, to be noticed, is to be blessed, and we increasingly live in a culture and a world that has no face. And it's only, I think, heightened our desire. And one of the greatest blessings I believe we can bestow on others is this, to simply see, notice, in such a way that communicates, I'm so glad you're here. You bring something special into my life. You add something to this room. There's more, though, when you look at the context of Jesus' baptism. God sees Jesus, but then he speaks delight over Jesus. We bless others when we take delight in them, see their presence as a gift. There's a difference between compliments and delighting, or admiring and delighting. We did the very first, I think it was the first week of this series, we did that whole admiration card experiment where we admire, sort of gave someone a compliment, which I think is a sign of maturity. But notice what happens when we give people compliments or admire people. It's usually within the context of something they've done. Grace, I admire your ability to sing so well. Kevin, I admire your ability to play guitar so well. What? It's about something they do. But this isn't what God does here. With Jesus, he simply says, you, just you, you make me glad. You're a delight to me. And how rarely we say that to others, don't we? So often our compliments are veiled behind, when you do this, it makes me glad. When you do this, it makes me glad. Very rarely do we simply say to people, just you are a delight to me. And this aspect of blessing, it doesn't have to be necessarily articulated in words, but oftentimes we can bless or curse with our body language just as much as we can with our words. But in the end, how we express delight in others isn't necessarily important, but that we do, but that we tell people around us, you, just you, are a delight. It doesn't have anything to do with what you've done. Just your presence in a room makes it warmer and richer. You delight me. To be able to say to someone that is a blessing. But there's a final element, of course, and that's to give of ourselves. It's fascinating at Jesus' baptism, it shapes the whole thing. God sends his Spirit to descend on Jesus. God gives of himself, you could say. And this is what empowers Jesus for the rest of his life. And we're going to talk about this a little bit more next week. But as in God giving his Spirit to Jesus, to bless someone finally is to give part of ourselves away to them. It's to give your time or your wisdom or your energy or your money or your space. It could be many different things, but to bless someone fully is to give part of ourselves away. Good parents do this. Good teachers do this. Good politicians, if there's any of them left, do this. Good people do this. They give some of themselves away, and this is the same call for us. But what does this look like practically? Let me demonstrate it in three different ways. I want to talk about this on a personal level, what it might look like within our community, and then what it might look like as we do something together. Individually, I think it means simply this. We're called to see and notice who needs to be delighted in, who is it that we need to sort of give part of our lives to. One of the things I was going to do if I got more selfies, but I see Melissa and I see Caroline here. They sent me the selfies. And so what I wanted to do with those two, because I see you here now, is I simply wanted to say, Caroline, I find you a delight. And when you're in the room talking to you, it's absolutely wonderful. I think you bring something very warm and special to this community. So thank you. You're a delight to this community. And Melissa, every time I have a conversation with you, I'm full of delight. You are a wonderful person. And I think you add so much value to this community just for who you are. If you'd sent me your selfies, I would have done the same for you. I think we need to have the courage to tell people more often that they're an absolute delight to us. And that they warm up the room when they're in it. And that we find them to be special, not because of what they did, but simply because of who they are. If we can reach the courage to do that, I think we're well on our way to the height of human maturity. But more than just that, to really see people and to be willing to give of ourselves to them. What does that mean within our community? Who do we need to notice? Who do we need to really see? Maybe there's people here and you see them come in week after week and you don't talk to them that much. Maybe they simply, to be blessed, need to just know that they've been seen. Acknowledged, noticed. I wanted to say something. I wanted to tread carefully on this. To our elders in the room, and I would define that as anyone over 50 years old, we need you to bless us younger folk. We need your blessing because so many of us go through life and we don't get it, or we've struggled in the past and we're wrestling with the demons that tell us that we're constantly irritating or nobody wants to pay attention to us. All of us have those wrestles, and to those, our elders in the room, we need you to bless us. And I know Nexus isn't always to your taste sometimes, but we need our older generation to bless the younger generation. And that doesn't get the rest of us off the hook. We have Nexus Youth meeting right now. We have Nexus Kids, and we need this community to come together and say, let's notice them. Let's really acknowledge them and not just think of them as annoying, as they can be, but to acknowledge them, to delight in them, and to pour ourselves into them. And what does this look like communally? Finally, you know, I think there's a way to do this as a community. So often, I think this, when churches think missionally, the very first thing they do is think this: where can we help or rescue some group of people? Which is good, but it isn't the pinnacle of maturity. We always sort of think to ourselves, who can we help? What's the group of people we can help and rescue and do something really good for? To fully bless someone or a group of people, I think it doesn't start with just who needs to be helped or rescued. It starts with who needs to be seen. Who needs to be noticed? Who needs to be delighted in? And only then, how can we give our part of ourselves to them? Let me give you an example of this. I know this week an important discussion was had between a couple people here at Nexus about the condition of our indigenous peoples here in Canada. If you don't know, the United Nations has flagged Canada, first world country, for the conditions our indigenous people live in. This is Canada, a developed country, a first world country. UN organizations like Amnesty International are flagging us, along with countries like Iran, for how we've treated our First Nations and Indigenous people. And one of our first inclinations is this: how can we help? How can we get in there and rescue them? And maybe we need to back up and say two things first. How can we just see them? Because right now they're sort of faceless. How can we see them? How can we recognize them? How can we hear their story? And then second, how can we actually take delight in our Indigenous people? And not just think of them as people that need to be helped or rescued, but people who have a vibrant culture, has something to offer us. And that's just one example. Could be the same with our homeless populations, our marginalized populations downtown, same with mental health. How do we sort of take a group of people that normally our first inclination would be to help, rescue, and say, whoa, 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 how can we just see them, really see them, their stories? How can we delight in them? And then how can we pour ourselves into them after that? I think that's what it would mean for a community. I think there's important discussions around that to be had, but let me simply leave it there. I think the height of maturity is to be a blessing. And it doesn't mean just helping or rescuing others. I think a blessing is a full thing to really see, to take delight in, and to pour ourselves into. I hope over the coming weeks, months, we will continue to have really important conversations around what that looks like.